Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 19 of the Homesteading UK podcast. I'm Alan. I'm here with my mate Mike. How you doing, Mike?
All right.
And we're in another new location, aren't we? I don't think we've recorded in here yet.
I don't know, have we?
I don't think so. We do like to mix it up, that's to be said.
Well, you might hear some rumbling and some BDPing and all sorts of things going on.
Yeah, we're in a working environment today, aren't we? So,
absolutely, mate. Not like that thing you call work.
I've seen what you've been doing. I'm not sure you call this one, mate.
There you go. That's a good rumble.
Yeah. So we are in the... Well, this is in the Workshop of Dreams because that's your place.
This is a proper workshop, isn't
it? Proper workshop, yeah. This is serious. So we're at Mike's place of work now. And we are sat in the workshop at the place of work. And we are surrounded by big old shelving with all sorts of gear on it. Some of it for gardening. Some of which for chicken keeping and...
My very small workbench.
Fantastic workbench. Yeah,
got this is where we make everything.
Big whiteboard up in the wall next to me.
Yeah, and probably the greatest thing ever to come in here is this wood burning stove.
It's about time, to be fair. It's about time. With the cold snap we're forecast for this week, you are going to need that.
Well, it's been lovely because obviously it's just powered by timber from the site and... kindling and pallet wood and all that jazz, but this is it's made a big difference in here because when it was in the, you know, when we were in December, it was cold in here and it was actually warmer outside. Mm-hmm. Obviously, but then we had it insulated, and then with the wood burning stove in here, even though it's a very big airspace, it actually heats up this airspace quite well actually. Yeah. And the majority of this was built probably over a weekend. This steel frame building went up really quick, and then it's got Celotex and ply insulation and insulated roofing sheets, but it's pretty high, isn't it?
Really high.
Obviously, the idea is that you can have stacking up the walls, which you access with telehandlers, or also you can bring in machinery in here. Mm. And you know, it's so nice on a farm that if it's raining or wet, you've got somewhere where you can drive your vehicles in and work on them if need be, or outside jobs and stuff like that. You might hear the rattling of the roll doors going on a bit, the wind hits it a little bit.
But yeah, so for people that are trying to imagine it, if you can imagine you've been past a sort of a farm out-of-town farm site, obviously, barns, and I suppose it's like a steel frame barn that you might see there typically.
Yeah, and then we've timber clad it.
Yeah, but it's actually not on my picture. You'd be forgiven for thinking it was from the outside. It's got a pitch roof above it, but timber cladding on the inside, big roll door, and then obviously this bit sealed off from the rest of the barn. And on the other side, you keep a lot of the vehicles, don't you, and telehandler.
Yeah, and the timber mills next door. And the idea will be that that will become a permanent timber processing unit there, so some of the bigger tractors and that will come out.
Yeah.
And they'll have their own place. And even though we have kept machinery in here, we've come to realise that if you've got a workspace like this, the most important thing is to actually have some clear space in it. Mm. I think you'll even, you know, like we always like to do, relate it back to what we're both doing at home. Mm. If your workshop that you're looking at, if you have some space in it, it will become a really usable space. Yeah. If it's just something that you cram stuff in and store stuff in, I can't actually ever do anything in it.
Yeah, no space to do anything.
No, or move things in and out and stuff. So for me, certainly, it's something which really is become more and more sort of important. It'd be that if you've got a workshop... Keep the space in it. Yeah. But I run my carving club in here.
Yep.
I've been kindly gifted a few machines, so we've got a few bits that are in here. That edge of plane, I think, so it's absolutely brilliant for reducing rough cut timber down to plain timber. Mm. Super for making dimensional timber. And there's a little table saw, and then there's a metal working bench as well. And where possible, try and keep the metal work and the woodwork apart, just because the two don't really mix very well. And then just behind you there, where there's a shelf, that's actually a tool wall that went up last week.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't rush a tool wall out. You've got to look at it for a little while.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because you don't want to start making things and put them up and then get them all down and put them all up again and get them all down. So we've been looking at that this week. And, so the idea is that by arranging the tools, it can be more efficient what we're doing here and clear out some space that's dead a bit up there. Right? Mm. So. I like making working spaces, as you know. It's one of my favourite things in the world.
Making the working space rather than working in them.
To make your work more effective, mate.
Oh, dear. So it's been a couple of weeks since we got together properly to chat.
Yeah.
And it's been a weird old time, isn't it? I mean, we've had days when it's felt like spring, and today it really doesn't.
No, and if people are here in the UK, they know that the forecast for the next couple of days, well, this week really, is cold. You know, temperatures
snow
down.
Snow tomorrow at work, anyway. Well, we're not for me at home, but for me where I work, it forecasts
really?
Snow. Yeah.
I've seen the forecast, yeah, and I think that if it's snowing where you work, then I think that where I live, because obviously it's about another 60 or 70 metres up, we always seem to get the snow. But yeah, I'm not expecting it to sit and stay
No.
You know, we only need like 1 millimetre of snow here to plunge the whole country into chaos.
Yeah.
But it did make me... did make me think about cutting my kindling, getting my timber indoors around the fire. So, you know, if you get a couple of days, even though you might still be able to go out and get stuff, it's quite nice not to have to, you know, and just to take that whole
I am looking forward to the day and it's snowing outside and the fire is lit.
Yeah, nice.
And I haven't got to move.
Yeah, I like
that. That day would be a nice day. Absolutely. I'm not sure if it's ever going to happen.
Of course it will.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Of course it will, mate.
Laying by the fire, snow falling outside. Might take the dog for a walk. Come home, have some soup, fresh bread.
Yeah, lovely.
And lay by the fire for the rest of the day.
Is it?
That sounds like my kind of day.
Lay by the fire?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, is that where you go now?
That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do, yeah. Well, you know, I struggle when the fire's lit, man. I'm struggling coming out of hibernation, although I'm managing it now. So. But so, yeah, so it's been cold, really cold at times. I've had frost quite a bit this year. It's been quite a cold winter relatively for where I am.
Right.
I would say. But it's been very dry. February, I think one of the driest Februarys on record.
Yeah, and I mean, the danger is that we get all that rain in March and April and it's wet, but over the last few years, April and May have actually been quite nice, and then it's sort of started to get wet in June, hasn't it? We've had wet Junes, but who knows, mate? I'm tired of trying to even think about what the weather's going to be like.
The weather's going to do what the weather's going to do, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. So, but be that as it may, I'm very conscious of time ticking on.
Yeah.
You can look up there on the board and you can see all the things I've sold already.
So in 27th of February.
Yeah, so that was week beginning last week.
I was doing chili, lettuce.
So I haven't sown the first three.
Okay.
Because I know that you can, and the earlier you do them, the better.
Yeah.
But I know then all I'm going to be doing is holding them in something heated, and I'm pretty sure, you know, they will catch up.
So I sowed tomatoes a week ago.
Yeah.
And
you'll have to keep them indoors, won't
you? Yeah, but I've got a facility to keep them off out frost-free.
Yes, and so have I. You know, I've got the polytunnel, but I think that my propagating unit is probably 8 inches deep. And so once they're above that, then what?
Yeah.
I've either got to pay to heat something that they can stand in, or just wait a couple of weeks. Because in a couple of weeks, once the sun hits that tunnel, it's really warm in there. And certainly having that access to really good light and heat, they'll catch up. And so my aim is to do those this week. You know, I'll get them into the heated propagator this week and get them germinated. And
my issue was not so much are they going to catch up, was more can I get enough germinated in time.
Right.
So I need to get them 20 degrees to germinate, which means indoors, although my house probably isn't 20 degrees all the time anymore.
No, no.
So I'm aware that's going to take a bit longer than it might have done in the past. So I had to start really, because I can only do so many at a time, and as you know, I like to do a lot of tomatoes. I also want to do some chilies this year.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was thinking is I've actually sown some onion seed this year for the first time ever. Yeah. I've done like spring onions before, but I'm doing main crop onions from seed
I've
at home.
I've sown mine as well, yeah.
Never done it before, but on the back of what you were saying last year, I used to do sets whenever I did it. This year I've done some from seed. We'll see what comes of it, but that needs 14 degrees to germinate.
They do need 14 degrees, but what I have found with onion is they're probably less fussy than your tomatoes and obviously things like that.
Yeah.
They just need the length of time, don't they, to go from seed to go right up through.
Yeah.
I've done onions, white and red magnate, I think, and Riesberger or something like that. And I've done mine in clumps. Have you done yours in multi-sown?
I've multi-sown three, I think, to a... the standard.
Some of mine are way more than that.
Yeah, I've done three, approximately three anyway, but I've done them in those standard size, you know, the half tray with the six modules in it.
Oh, wow.
So they're quite big, so they're holding there for a really long time.
Yeah, I've done 24s, plugs.
Yeah.
But like you say, they'll be what they are, and certainly looking at how those Sturon have kept this year, the ones I grew from seed, the smaller medium ones have lasted better in store than the big ones.
Right.
And the very small ones.
Yeah.
So... you want those medium ones, really, don't you? In order for them to just hold their condition during the winter months. But one thing that is important is if you are someone who is growing for storage. Look at there's a big difference in which variety store better. And so, it might just look like onion sets and what have you, but it's worth checking out on the growing characteristics in your seed catalogue or on the back of the pack. Some of them will say, really, keep a good keeper or keeps really well. Yeah. And that's certainly the case for things like potatoes and onions and maybe winter squash and all those things.
That information is really readily available from your seed suppliers.
Should be, shouldn't it?
So certainly when I'm going through my King's catalogue every autumn and I'm looking on there and going, right, well, one, and the other thing that usually is available as well is when you sow it, when you harvest it. Mm. So I'm always looking at that information, I'm using that information to make informed decisions about what I want, which varieties I want.
Some of them even say freeze well, don't they?
Yeah, and things like that. So some that will dovetail together really nicely. And then obviously making sure that I've got some that store if I want to store them, and some that for fresh eating or not. Yeah. So I'll just get them all for storage and then just eat what you've got then.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the broad beans and my peas, they're all in. I've had some trouble with mice, but I'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
Mons 2 have gone down and through. And I've done some parsley. I might have to see if I can sort that rattling out in a minute. But my garlic's well up now, in the tunnel especially. I've done two lots and, the garlic's a foot high now already.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So I found some rogue garlic at my allotment, which is probably about 8 inches tall already.
Okay.
It's just where I've not harvested all the...
Yeah.
So there's loads I didn't harvest last year. There's loads, apparently.
So are you going to just replant them or move them around?
Oh, right. Might just leave it.
Get a big double bubble.
I might try and separate the clumps out a bit and spread them out, but they are... there's a big old garlic in there. I hadn't intended to plant garlic this year, but it's there, so I might as well now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes no sense.
Well, I can't even... I don't know how many I've put down. Probably 300.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But obviously some of that will be for sale. And I don't eat that much garlic. We probably have a clove, maybe one or two cloves a month. We don't eat a lot. Yeah. I know you eat a lot more than me. Yeah. But, we are starting to... eat different things, obviously, because of the nature of my job, and that's how it should be, really. Yeah. And there's been a lot of talk about that, hasn't there, in the news this last fortnight.
Well, I think possibly that's something to come back, and if we're going to do a second segment today, what I'd really like to do is spend a bit of time thinking about what people can do to. We've done things like it before in the past, but a timely reminder of what you can do to help yourself.
Okay, yeah, I think that would be good, and maybe we'll wait until we've finished this little section and then go on to that. But
if you're happy to.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely.
So obviously we've got a list of things you've been sowing out there. What else have you been doing there?
I've been setting up my propagator. You can literally go through and watch ones there.
Oh, look, they're all right.
Obviously I've been working really hard getting the soil and manure into the second tunnel, which is nearly operational. There's been some ordering, we've had some muck delivery. You'll really like that one in capital letters exactly halfway down. So I've ordered 50 bale arm crates. That's Tesco crates to you. Because they're just so handy for all of those sewings.
Oh, you can buy those?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
About $220, $230 each.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we've ordered a pallet load.
Okay.
Because they're so handy.
Yeah.
And you can get them in different depths and what have you.
They
but for moving a large number of seeded or, modules or pots, you get 24 9-centimetre pots into one of those, or you get four half trays with a little tiny gap.
Yeah.
And they're just ergonomically designed for moving things around, because that's exactly what they are.
And they stack really nicely.
And they stack, which when you're germinating actually isn't a bad thing, because you can stack it. It's like a bit of timber, mate. You can stack them up while they're germinating, and it's not a problem, is it?
No.
But
easy to move around.
So they will be a really, really handy thing. And there has also been, obviously, like I said, just some upkeep and servicing. So the first tunnel had a couple of little rents in it, and there were some bits that needed tidying up, and so just getting a big roll of polytunnel tape and just playing around and making sure that everything was ready for the growing season, servicing really. But the soil has gone into the topsoil has gone into the second tunnel, and the manure as we've got has gone in there, and I've been rotivating that daily, just every day going and break it up a bit more. And it's drying out and drying out and drying out and drying out, which is what I want. I haven't quite got enough organic matter in there, but I do remember saying this about the first tunnel, not having enough organic matter. I'll tell you what.
It didn't stop you from growing,
did it? It grew in there, didn't it?
Yeah.
So I will try and get some more organic matter. And then we've got the third tunnel is up as well. And we've got some mixed farmyard manure in there, a lot of pig and horse. and cow, but it's really hot still.
Did I see in there you've got plastic over both of them now?
I've got plastic over both of them on one side, and they've got a mesh on the other side.
Right, okay.
So you can...
As in one end? I'm trying to visualise.
No, so literally...
Across, it looked like the front was all plastic.
So what we've got is the backs are plastic.
Yeah.
And the fronts will go in, but it's easier to leave them off because you can drive a tractor
in there.
Yeah,
I get that, yeah.
But if you were to look at it head on, they've got mesh on one side.
Oh, I see.
And plastic to the ground on the other side.
Oh, okay, all right.
And that's just because we had some over and... You know, what we will probably do is put the mesh up as well and then cut some holes in the other thing that we can roll up and down. Yeah. So it's kind of like a retractable side, but it's more important for those next two tunnels that they're secure from pests.
Yeah.
And we have really secured the corners. Yeah. So hopefully we can keep pest damage to a minimum down there, especially cabbage wise. So bats and stuff in the first tunnel. Yeah. So that's the plan, but... there's going to be a variety of growing conditions in there.
Yeah.
The first tunnel will always be the hottest one because I can close it right down.
Yes, yeah.
But the others won't be cold.
No, but you won't need it to be as hot as that for most of the crops you want to grow, will it?
Really, no, in fact, I don't want it to be that hot because the lettuce has really struggled in the first tunnel over the winds over the summer. And, you know, there were other things which felt the benefit of it early in the season. But as it went on... you know, carrots don't even like it that hot, mate.
No.
And certainly a lot of the brassicas that I put in there, because I had to, because that's all I had, they struggled and they got, you know, they wilted quite considerably. And we had one crop which got really, really heavy infestation of aphids because it was just lovely and warm and there was no kind of opportunity for there to be any difference in the temperature. Yeah. It was going to be the same all the way through. So the idea is that the last one is very temperate. You know, the idea of the brassica one at the end will be that it is like growing outside, just in a big cage so that nothing can fly in it. Whether that happens or not, I don't know.
They seem to find a way in anyway, in my experience, but, you know, if it's only one or two, you can manage that.
Yeah, it's a lot easier dealing with one or two when loads more aren't going to come along as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So that's been what I've been doing, and you know, just some general work around the yard, like I've been doing today. But tidying up still, just on a bigger scale, really. So that's what I've been doing at work. But I bought another plastic powerhouse.
Oh, you did buy in the end.
I did, yeah. I went and got it because they were half price in Wilko's.
Yeah,
and
why would you not, then?
I just couldn't not. And the majority. So for people who aren't aware, if you're someone who's thinking or contemplating buying a greenhouse, and you wanted a nice, you know, if you wanted a small greenhouse just for raising seedlings, I think it's about £200 now for the cheapest 6x4 greenhouse. About 200 and something.
Yeah, but you're not going to get glass for that. You're going to get polycarbonate.
Polycarbonate. And I've had one of those greenhouses, and it was absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And I had it for quite a long time, and then when I had the small children, it wasn't appropriate to have it in the garden, so I actually gave it to somebody else. And. And then, you know, when the time came around, I didn't have the money then to get another one. So I bought one of these, and they call them blow-away greenhouses. And they are... I can try and sort that out if you want.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah, that's what I mean. Hold on a second.
Oops!
Well, hopefully that's a bit there on the sound. We just had a bit of problems with the roll-up door.
The wind's battering in, mate.
It's windy and now it's raining outside as well.
Yeah, it's all right.
I was just aware it's making a bit of a rattle. Hopefully you didn't hear too much of it on the recording, and hopefully it's a bit better now. But anyway,
I bought a blow-away
greenhouse.
And it's 6x4 and you can walk in it. And I can't tell you how much that improves your experience. Because if you're someone who, like me, had to rely on windowsills and things like that, the money that I spent out, so it was £35 in Wilko.
Yeah.
And... you can buy that online, and I think it's £10, I think, delivery. But I would still say that represents quite a good deal.
Yep.
They're normally about £60-70 now.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money for that product.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say is that you need to either go over the top with some straps.
Yeah.
Don't rely on the little peg things that they say. I mean, they last 1 minute.
Yeah.
And I've even seen ones which have been weighted down with bricks and stuff. It's not enough, I don't think.
The only thing really I've seen that's been very effective is weighting down the plastic on the bottom can be tucked
rain
underneath.
Rain flaps, yeah, that's right.
And then if you can earth that up enough and prevent the air from getting under at all,
absolutely,
it should stay there. But then if you leave the door open on the wrong day, you're still going to have a problem.
Yeah. But what I would say is that they are very, very good at keeping, catching that heat, and then they get very warm.
Yeah.
But what worked for me was that I would say that, you know, you're going to get 3 or 4 years out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what it gives you is, one, a place to go and work, even in the rain.
Yeah.
And I love going out into my little plastic polytunnel house, my little plastic greenhouse in the March, you know. Can have, and it's dry, you know. Yep. They are dry, and they don't get too bad condensation either. Mind
get you out of the cold and the wind, won't it?
Get you out of the cold, get you out of the wind. It gives you a place to store all your stuff,
yep,
which is also really handy in the winter and stuff like that. And then it also just, you know, I put some extra shelving in mine, and as you know, I just grow in mine all my seedlings and my starter plants. But it means that things like courgettes, you can grow them on in pots without having to put them out.
Yeah.
And they just get such a head start that if they then inevitably get hit by slugs or what have you when you put them in your garden or your plot or your allotment, they've got a bit of strength to them that they can kind of withstand it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know that I grow stuff now as plugs to plant out. And that's exactly one of the reasons why I do it. Is that,
and me,
they'll
too.
Put up with a little bit of slug nibbling them when they're a bit bigger.
Yeah.
If they come along, and I've literally had it where they've just germinated.
And then battered.
And the slug comes along and it just nibbles through the stem and the whole thing's dead. Yeah, that's it. It's gone. It's too late.
So I use mine for that. And I also then, once I get sort of to around May, and I've done the majority of my germinating, there might be a few things in there, I just grow in pots because mine sits on flags. I haven't got any beds in it.
Yeah.
And I had used grow bags, but now I just use compost bags.
Yeah.
And as you know, I grow my tomatoes in them more than I can eat.
Yeah.
And I will have tomatoes in there from, I don't know, when they would first come. Not as early as yours, probably early June maybe.
But as in for eating?
Yeah.
Oh, you're looking at July.
Yeah.
July to August.
July?
I usually try and have my first ripe tomato on the last day of June.
Okay, so July, not
June. So you're looking at July or August, really. So
then you might have them a little bit longer than if they're outside. They do go on a bit longer.
Yeah.
But I also grow in mine a couple of chilies, which is all the chilies I need.
Yeah.
And I tend to grow two or three pots of basil in there.
Yeah.
And I have done sweet peppers and cucumbers. And I probably will again this year, but we'll come back to that. Because it's such a small greenhouse, it's quite hard to get the conditions right for both tomatoes and cucumbers, but I don't think they're as picky as people think.
They're not. I think the difference really in my experience is that, and I've not had loads of experience of growing cucumbers, but obviously tomatoes I have, the big difference seems to be that cucumbers need a lot more water than tomatoes do.
They like it. They like humidity.
They like humidity, and they're...
But when I did do that, they got brown rot, you know, and actually the most successful cucumbers I've had are actually outdoor cucumbers, ones that are designed for growing outdoors, grown in what is it basically a, you know, a kind of polytunnel but with a door open in the summer I never shut the door because it'd be too hot, they'd all frazzle and die, and so what you've got is you've got a hardy specimen. But it's got protection, so then it grows really well.
Mm.
And I have to say, for that 6x4 greenhouse, I grew a cucumber called Mini Munch last year. So imagine like a gherkin, but a sweet. And they were perfect, you know, because they're not on the vine for too long and stuff like that. And I would say that they would represent quite a good value because you can use one of them in a salad and then it's done.
Yeah.
And then you go and get the next one. They were pretty prolific, so maybe people could have a look at those. But I did grow cucumbers really well outside as well.
Yeah.
So I might grow. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute because it's going to be a lot of...
The only thing I'm thinking is that obviously with it being 6x4, presumably your bench space either side is probably only about a foot either side.
So I've got benches running along at about a foot, yes.
So that's about 30 centimetres for people that are using metric. So I think it's about 1.2 metres wide. You get a bench of about 30 centimetres on either side, or a foot either side.
That's right, yeah.
And then a 2 foot or 60 centimetre walkway down the middle. Is that about
right? But I've got probably a slightly deeper one at the back because I don't need to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I encroach on that bit in the middle because obviously it's space. But what I do, as you know, I'm sure I spoke about this before, but I put extra shelving into my polytunnel
and then I actually grow tumbling tomatoes in grow bags, and I might have three layers.
Yeah.
So it's not beyond the realms of possibility to get 12 or 15 tumbling tomato plants, and that is a lot of tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know, more than we can eat.
Yeah.
You know, we're freezing them by then, and I grow cherry tomatoes, as you know. Yeah. And then maybe two cucumbers at the back, and then two peppers, and I'm growing them in big flower pots, you know, from Asda, you know, buckets.
Yeah.
The only thing I do is I do a bottomless pot on my grow bag so that they've got a bit more soil. That's all. Yeah. But you could grow them in big pots. I just like the tumbling ones. I think you get more for your money than if you do a vine. Mm. And the thing about vine is that if you get blossom end rot, you kind of lose a whole vine. Mm. You don't just get one that's got blossom rot.
Potentially.
And I don't know whether it's true or not, but they're quicker to ripen. Cherry tomatoes, because there's not as much of them.
I don't know if there's any doubt about that. But
having explored a few varieties now, you know, there are some nice ones out there.
Yeah.
There are some nice
ones. I've got some new varieties this year. I can't remember the names of them.
Yeah, I've got some new varieties.
I
can show you.
Buffalo Sun, I think.
Huh?
Buffalo Sun, I think is one of them.
Buffalo Soldier?
No, Buffalo Sun. I think that's one of them.
I'll just get my small seat, right?
And I've got my usual Mountain Magic and San Marzano. They've gone in, some of them have at least.
Get
your little seat tray, are you? Oh my word! Yeah, it's massive. Yeah, so I've got my tomatoes on the go.
Look at it.
Oh, I like this. So they're all organised by month. Is that month you can first?
And also, you know, where I've got multiple crops with face to mouth. Yeah. I've got a reputation of being really disorganised, but I would say that it's all a lie. Yeah, look,
well, that's all a lie.
Bit of Tigerella.
Oh, I've done that before. That's all right. That's a good one. Some gold.
They are amazing. Yeah. They were brilliant last year.
Yeah.
You'll have to go through. There's plenty in there. I will be growing, though. I think I've got some black opal.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, not done them before.
All right.
And I've got some...
I think I've done black opal before as well.
Yeah. Gardener's Delight.
Yeah.
They're a bog standard. San Marzano I'm going to try, because I grew Roma last year and they were okay.
I think the San Marzano are better than Roma for my money, but...
Here we go, I've got a little bit of Cocktail Crush.
Okay, yeah.
A little bit of your one.
Yes, they're both flight resistant, those.
And I've got, there was one more in there which was new. I think it's an old heirloom variety called Saint Pierre.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that one?
No.
Let me see, was it there somewhere? Yeah, Saint Pierre, traditional French. I'll tell you, I have still got quite a lot of Roma.
So if you got it, mate.
I'm thinking of having a go at that, those ones. But we've got lots. Samazano and Roma, be interesting. But we
just
did get
a side by side comparison, that's for sure. So these organised by month of first sowing, or
how
have you done that?
Well, if I'm honest with you, I still think that even with a polytunnel, you know, they say you can sow your beetroot in March.
Yeah.
It's too cold.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather have better germination and better follow through than sowing them early as I can. It is different in a polytunnel because it is warmer. There's no kind of bones about it. But I would like to make sure that, you know, rather than having space in a polytunnel, which has got some scraggly plants, because space is such a premium now, I'd rather have really healthy crops that went in there and then I didn't have to really cos it. You know, that they're going to get on and thrive well because they haven't had a weak and poor start. So
what temperature is it in your polytunnel today, would you say?
I would say that it's still quite cold, but I would say it's probably 10 degrees, 12 degrees maybe, yeah.
Wow.
And it's the wind chill that doesn't...
Yeah, so even with the heaters on in my greenhouse, I've struggled to get it to 10 degrees.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it is about 10 degrees in there. I haven't got a thermometer in there, I must get one.
I think you should. It'd be interesting.
It won't be that tonight.
No, I know it won't be overnight, but during the day, because I'm looking at it, because I've got a thermometer in my greenhouse. And obviously, I've got the one tube heater in there. It's only a little greenhouse. I've got one tube heater, and I've got my little heated propagator unit in there.
Yeah.
Which is probably only big enough for two full-side seed trays, if that.
I made one.
Did you?
I'll show it to you in a minute.
All right.
I literally made one out of plywood and a piece of double glazing window.
Okay.
Which I think you might have even gave me ages ago.
Yeah,
the exact one that we're going to use for solar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You kept the glass, did you?
I kept the whole thing, and then I was thinking, you know, I was looking at getting one for propagation, and we probably will get one at some point, but I think it will take six seed trays.
Okay. Which is nearly as money as I need for germinating tomatoes, because in a half a seed tray, I mean, you can get quite a lot of germinated tomato seedlings in that, can't you?
I wonder if I made like a little cold frame and then put the big enough for that tube heater to sit in and then put that out, if I could germinate in that next year.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I
want to try the hotbed thing too.
I've only really got one windowsill that I can use indoors.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look at Dowden, Charles Dowden, for people who don't know, he's an exponent of no-dig gardening, really famous YouTuber gardener here as well. Yeah. I watched him doing his hotbed.
So that's with the fresh manure in it.
Fresh manure. And then he was just sitting trays on
top
it,
of it,
and it was cooking. Yeah. And I don't think you need that much, do you? Well, it wouldn't surprise me if you put manure in a green crate and then put another green crate on top. I think you're halfway there. But no, it probably would warm up enough. And I think it's more to deal with the fluctuation at night rather than the top end temperature in the day. I think it's probably just to stop the swing.
Which is where the tube heater is coming, because they do get the temperature up a little bit and they maintain it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's still not, you can feel the difference when you walk in there, but it's not warm by any stretch. So
I think you should just buy a really cheap electric blanket. Absolutely, and then just put all your seed trays on it.
Yeah, or just get, what, rather than starting a fire randomly in the greenhouse, maybe get...
What kind of stuff to burn in your greenhouse, is it?
It's the wooden slats on the shelf. They'll burn. but get a heat mat. I mean, that'd be warm enough to warm the roots and get it going.
Absolutely. I mean, those ones are... Yeah, but they're quite small, aren't they? For a lot of money. I was just thinking, you know me, a bit of a saver.
Well, I'm just thinking, if I had the tube... Which is probably about, I don't know, 4 foot long, 5 foot long maybe. And then set that in the back of a cold frame. And then heated that up. That would be enough heat probably to germinate tomatoes.
Absolutely.
I'll have to try that next year.
Well, I think that all of these little tips will give you a little bit more surety of your germination rates. And that's what we're after, isn't it? But quite honestly, I've never really had many fail with regards to seed. If you buy good seed, you tend to get quite lucky, don't you, with it, so... anyway, so there has that will be going on in the next week. Maybe even tomorrow I'll do a few.
Yeah, I've got plans to do a big sowing at the weekend.
Okay.
Done one, reasonable sowing, but I've got probably only about a quarter of one of the greenhouses with trays in it at the minute, and I want to really start smashing it. And now we're into March, although it's forecast to be cold, and there's doomsayers saying it's going to be the coldest March and all that nonsense. We're waiting to see about that. We know this week's going to be cold. But if
you've got nothing else to do, get yourself to Wilco and get yourself to buy four greenhouse, plant things in that.
Or get on Facebook Marketplace and get a proper metal greenhouse.
Yes, and I did look at those.
Did you any joy or not? You obviously decided against it.
I think, one, the availability is going down. That's noticeable.
Right.
And there is an expectation, obviously, to go take it down normally.
Yeah.
Mark it all up.
So 2 days' work.
And then transport it, and we're talking about glass normally, which is, you can't just throw that in the back.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have to have somewhere to store it and then put it up. And I think that if you've got access to the right vehicle and you've got some time, I do think you could do it. But I don't think you're ever going to get it back up without breaking some stuff.
And then
you've got the associated, right, well, where do I get the glass from?
Yeah.
And all of that. And I can see why for some people it would be probably...
So I suppose I look at that and go, well, it's 2 days' work. But in terms of the actual, because I've done a few greenhouses now, putting it back up again is not a big drama.
No.
Getting the glass, I know where I do that from, and that's not a big drama.
No.
So I look at it, I suppose, perhaps with a bit more, because I've done it before.
Yeah.
It's a bit less daunting.
Yeah. I think that if it was two of you and you had a friend or something, you could probably do it in a weekend, couldn't you?
Yeah.
But it would take quite a considerable amount of time. But then you're going to have a much better quality product that might last you for 10 years, might it?
Yeah.
So. Pay your money, take your choice, I suppose. For me, the plastic polyhouse works. I didn't see anything small enough, which was the main reason.
Right, okay.
And even though we're both advocates of Facebook Marketplace, what I've done over the last few months is I've reduced the size of distance I'm willing to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that, for me... I'm trying to live a little bit of a more simple life, if that makes sense. And so I've certainly reduced my radius. Even though I might get more products come up,
I think that just having stuff in my locality is where I'm at now. And, yeah. and if I have to be a bit more patient and
it's
wait
time as well, isn't it? You know, like some of the things you found suggested for me.
Yeah.
Like, to find time to go 10 miles to go and pick it up.
Yeah. And then get
not
there.
Not always easy.
No, and it's
and people
not
want
right.
to get, when they put them on, they usually want them gone by tomorrow, don't they?
Absolutely.
As well. And so you're kind of like, well, I've got to dash over. I must do it today, otherwise, whatever. And
yeah, so I've been just concentrating on my local town, really.
Yeah.
If I'm being totally honest with you. And that's actually worked out quite well for me. But I was chatting to a lady, forgive me, I can't remember her name, and we were chatting about, she was setting up a garden and stuff like that. And she hasn't got a car.
Yeah.
So then what?
Yeah.
You know, and unless you're someone who can... you know, go and get things very locally. Mm. Facebook Marketplace really isn't really that helpful, is it?
No.
And you know, and that's a shame because it's such a wonderful resource and there are things on there. But I don't know about you. I think things have crept up on there, you know, things which used to be free are not anymore.
Mm.
And people are coming to realise that, you know, a little bit like how eBay was represented very good value and then perhaps not so much now, people check and see what everyone else is getting for the product. I think you're still lucky if you can find someone who just wants shot of things. And, and if I'm totally honest with you, my best finds and things like that have been when I've gone to pick something up I've paid for and someone's gone, oh, I've also got...
Oh, okay,
that's actually when when I've
when
I seem to have got my best things, you know, just by kind of coincidence, you know?
Mm.
So anyway... but that's about it really with regards to what I've been doing. And
well, I've got a few bits because I obviously second allotment, half allotment, so I've got 150 square meters growing space now.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Quite a lot of space. Yeah. so someone on the way, I'm gonna have to put some graft in. So first thing I did was weekend before last, I moved the apple tree, and that's gone into the new plot along with my grapevine. I found last year that the apples, I didn't see any of them. All I did was feed the squirrels.
Nice.
They took them before they were even anywhere near ripe, and so there's no point in me leaving them in the back garden unless I'm going to do something about the squirrels, which I'm probably not.
No.
So I decided to move that down to the allotment, and I have, having spoken to one of my new allotment neighbours down there, they reckon that that little bit further down the hill, where it is now, is the new plot, is enough extra protection from the sea air that I shouldn't get windburn on the fruit trees, which is what I was struggling with previously, because it's quite exposed to the other side. So that's gone down there along with the grapevine, more or less for the same reason. And then I was just looking at it going, I've got to do something. You know, I can't let a weekend go by now without doing some things that feel like I've made some progress.
Yeah.
So yesterday afternoon, I was up at the allotment for about 2 hours, I suppose, just weeding and tidying. And I hadn't cleared away all the stuff from last season, so all my bean plants were even up still, you know, on the wigwam. So that's all come down for now.
Yeah, I did all of those as well, funnily enough. But out in the field and cleared up, and I also put some Mitex down. And you know, in hindsight, it would have been better to plant through it.
Yeah.
Obviously, laying it over raspberries and then having to cut through and find them all was quite tricky.
Yeah.
I've got one row of fruit bushes to do, but obviously the strawberry bed, I just rotovated it out to get the top surface off. I know that there'll still be some growth there.
Yeah.
And then I've pegged that down, and I'll plant the strawberries through it.
Yeah.
One thing I was a bit you know, kind of ahhing about were, and I'll ask your advice on that, is that summer fruit in raspberries and rhubarb don't necessarily always emerge from where they are planted.
No.
And so I'm kind of, I've held back on doing the summer fruit in raspberries because there's no way I could cut through them all because the amount of runners they've thrown up.
Yeah.
So I think what I'm actually going to try and do is run two strips each side and just get it in as close as I can into the middle. Because, I mean, some of the runners are up a foot away from the centre.
Well, the trouble you're going to have with the raspberries is they're just going to spread further and further unless you try and contain them somehow.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be easy, whatever you do.
And I don't really want to.
No.
Because I want the runners in a way. I know that they're not as good, but...
You're almost better to have a grass path either side and just mow that. And then when the raspberries come up in the grass, they just get mowed off.
Yeah, and I can do that. I can do that. It's more the weeding of the plants in between, but I'll have to just do it by hand.
I think
when we looked at it for raspberries, looking at how commercial growers do it, that is seemingly how they go about it.
Yeah.
And rhubarb's quite similar, isn't it? In that you get your central crown, but quite often then you get your other crowns.
Over time, it will spread, and you'll get multiple crowns eventually,
which is what you want.
Yeah, it's what you want, and the easiest solution to that actually is to let them do it, and then every 3 years or so, dig them up, split them, and divide them, and then plant some of it back and discard the centre normally.
So it's kind of what I decided to do is to leave the summer fruiting raspberries. Luckily, the summer fruiting raspberries are in one row and the autumn fruiting ones are. So the autumn ones are not so bad because you cut them right to the ground.
Yes.
Yeah, and then they tend to come up. They do throw off the odd runner, but they're much more centralised to the where you plant them through. So I've done the autumn fruiting ones and I've made some quite big tea slits in there so that there is hopefully as well a kind of tendency for new shoots to emerge to kind of, oh, there's the light.
And
that's okay. I'm also aware that Mypex is not 100% weed proof.
I have to say, I'm not a fan of Mypex. The more I've used it over the years, the less I like it. Just because the weeds will grow on top of it, down through it, up through it. Mm. And eventually what you'll have to do is take the whole lot out and good luck lifting all that Mypex. You end up having to cut bits of it off.
So the alternative for me is to mulch the top of the Mypex as well.
Yep.
But it needs to be deep enough and of the right substance to not provide a growing medium.
Yep.
And even if I put bark mulch on it, which is probably what I've got,
it will eventually
turn to a growing medium.
All you can do, and one of the things I was going to say is, are you better off mulching the whole lot really heavily every year?
I haven't got it.
No.
So, for fruit. And then I was looking at commercial growing for strawberries, and funnily enough, you know, your shelf life in Mypex is about 3 years. Mm. That's when you dig your strawberries out and replant. So I think that with the strawberry bed, I'll try and get 3 years out of it, and then I'll just have the whole lot up, and it'll be how it is. But for those 3 years then, I can straw the top of the Mypex and grow my strawberries through that. Yeah. And that I can kind of see.
Not tempted to table grow your strawberries? I know it's a big infrastructure.
I think it would be too much infrastructure-wise, and we're not planning really on doing anything with the strawberries here with regards to public selling, apart from processing and eating fresh ourselves.
Yeah.
Because where we are, you know, Kent Sussex border, there are so many strawberry growers here on a much bigger scale.
Strawberries, are you?
No, what you we did think we might do is that we might do a punnet of, because the other thing is, you know, I've got maybe a 50 metre run of strawberries, right? And, you know, if I stagger the planting, I thought I might get about 250 in that, you know, if I sent them out, and then there'll be runners and so on and so forth. But they're not all going to come at the same time, you know, it's not going to be like having acres and big strawberry fields. So what we think maybe might happen though is I might be able to get a mixed punnet of summer fruit and raspberries and strawberries, and you might be able to buy that in the shop, your summer fruits, you know, maybe with a few red currants or black currants thrown in there kind of thing. Yeah. So it's going to be more of a mixed bag, you know. But the majority of the fruit that we get here is either for family use or for processing into jams and what have you. So that's on the cards.
So I've got in my new plot, I don't know if I've said this before, but there's at least two separate patches of strawberries in there already. Helpfully, one of the patches of raspberries is labelled up as autumn fruiting raspberry.
Okay, that's good.
Which I'm assuming the other patch is just...
Or might
summer
be all.
Fruit and raspberry.
I'd have to say that I'd have awesome fruit and raspberries. They're so much easier to keep.
Yeah. But I'm intending on just tidying up for now.
Yeah.
What I might do is build a fruit cage over top eventually. But I'm intending just to leave it more or less as it is, that bit of it.
How big is it?
Well, I've got, at the moment, it's got five long runs of beds. They're not raised, but they're terraced.
Yeah.
And they're probably almost the width of the allotment, which is probably 10 metres.
Oh, wow, that is long.
No, 7.5 metres probably.
Okay.
And 10 metres down here. And they're probably about 2 foot wide, each of them. There's five of them. And then at the bottom, there's this big patch that's obviously been used for, like, compost bins and stuff in the past. The soil in there is incredible.
Yeah, that's where you want to...
So, that's where the fruit tree went straight in. I just started digging and I was like, this is going to be hard work on the chalk down here. And then it went, lovely soil. So
superb. Well, I've got a frame of a greenhouse, you see.
Oh, I see.
You can just peg mesh all over it. Yeah. I think it's 5 by 5 feet or 6 by 5 feet.
You've still got your old one as well, actually.
You can just stand them up,
net
over the top.
Peg them down, net over the top.
But you won't need to worry too much about the wind knocking them over because of... The only other thing that I will probably use the Mypex for is to try and suppress some of the weed growth around the bottom of my fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
But I will make big discs up and I'll put them in and peg them out. And I think that actually will work quite well.
I think that's going to work a lot better than the raspberry ones and the strawberry ones, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, we'll see how we go. And I'll keep the tops clear of those.
Yeah. You know. Well, this is it. it's easy to see because you've just got the tree growing up.
Yeah. So that's the plan. But yeah, I mean, everybody's doing this sort of thing, but it's trying to get these jobs done before the weed growth really does kick in.
You know? Well, that's what I've done. I mean, I've cleared 14 of my 25 beds yesterday at the original allotment patch. I have to give them different names, don't I?
Yeah. What, like what?
I don't know, because I've got two little patches now. But yeah, weird, isn't it? But no, I've done the 5x5 beds that I've got. I've done 14 of those. Just weeded them out, give them a good hoe over, dug out the bigger weeds. That I
Did
came
you
across.
Recover them just to stop?
I haven't recovered them yet.
Will you?
I will have to. Yeah, I'll have to. And I've got some compost made, but probably not enough. It just
cardboard or
just,
anything.
It just breaks down so much. I shouldn't need the cardboard because I've done the hard work when I first set it up. Yeah. So it should just be a question of keeping it topped off. So if I can find enough compost to do 4 inches across the whole thing,
oh, that'd be nice.
I shouldn't have any trouble.
Well, that does lead us on to shortages, which perhaps we take
yes.
a break and
we'll
talk about
now. We'll come back to that. All right, nice one.
Because there ain't no compost.
Now we're back. So you want to talk about shortages?
Well, I'm looking at you, mate.
it seems to be something that comes back every so often. We come back to this conversation again, don't we?
Yeah.
There's something, you know, ever since, well, probably since you got me into Tottenham doing a bit of prepping, perhaps I notice it a bit more. I don't know. Or is it just that it's happened?
I wonder if it's that you notice the shortages or the feeling of what it feels like if you can't get the shortages.
The smugness of the not shortage.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. And I'm not saying that, you know, when things happen as they are happening here currently, I'm totally prepared for it because I haven't got a load of fresh tomatoes grown in my heated greenhouse and so on and so forth. But it gives you the option to do something about it.
Yes.
Whether it's just knowing that you could do something about it, or whether it's that you know that you don't even have to go out to do something about it. So I know that despite having a huge array of seeds here for the work placement, I've got a small tin of seeds at home, and there are some staples in it exactly for this, so that if their seeds weren't available, I'd be okay for a bit, and I wouldn't have to go and get any. And yeah, germination rate might be a bit, you know, some of them probably a year out of date, but it won't matter. What was really interesting and got me thinking about this was listening to the radio yesterday and reading on the BBC how the sale of seeds has gone through the roof.
Yes, and seed prices have done the same.
Absolutely, you know, by online orders of seeds, about 40% higher.
Really?
About 40% higher. Now, some of that kind of mirrors the COVID experience where people were going to be at home and some of the things through the supply chain because of the lack of movement from European markets and things like that meant that our supply didn't meet our demand.
Yeah.
But I think that's backed up now, though, with people not having the amount of money to just buy everything that they need if they can get it. Because obviously the cost of living crisis has kicked in for a lot of people in the UK and across Europe. And I don't know about beyond, probably has with the cost of fuel going up. And maybe just people are thinking, I could grow some things. And I think that that's what it is.
Is it? Because I probably we need to take it step back a step first anyway. But hold this thought, is that what it is? Is it people thinking, I could grow a few things? Or is it people coming back into it or whatever? But before we do that, let's go back to where we're at. Because I remember a couple of weeks ago, we had some friends around for lunch. And they said, you couldn't spare us some eggs, could you? Because we just can't buy them. Can't get them anywhere. And we know that's about avian flu. We know about the flocks of laying hens in the country. There's been millions of them wiped out by this avian flu and culls and everything else. But then I went supermarket shopping a week later. And I went on a different time when I would normally go, and the shelves were nearly empty. There were very few fresh vegetables anyway.
Yeah.
Everything else, it wasn't too bad for most other things, but fresh vegetables, really limited supplies, and lots of things you just couldn't get them.
No.
What's going on? What is it?
Well, I know that some of the supermarkets are in quite long-term deals with farmers and growers. There's been some supply issues, hasn't there?
Yeah.
And most notably, people are understanding that some things have become rationed in the UK especially out of season salad crop, yeah. that's become very difficult to get hold of now, isn't it? And in fact, most supermarkets have put a quota limit in, haven't they, for what you're allowed. You can buy one, you know, pack of tomatoes and so on and so forth. And that was down to poor weather in Spain, actually, and the difficulties of getting that across. But I also think that, you know, and I was listening to this on the news this morning, and, you know, you have to take these things with a pinch of salt, but there's also an element of our market in the UK about how our supermarkets buy food.
Mm.
And so they want to have a static price on crops.
Mm-hmm.
So they were using the example of iceberg lettuce this morning. And in the UK, you can buy an iceberg lettuce for the same money in the winter as it is in the summer. But in the summer, the farmers can't sell them because they've got an abundance. And they end up having to destroy that crop.
Wow.
But now what you've got is the flip side of that, is that they haven't got enough, but the supermarket want them for the same price. Whereas the cost of them is actually way more now because there's not as many. And so it's better for farmers to sell to somebody else, isn't it?
So I was reading that this is a problem that's particularly bad in the UK.
It is bad in the UK because of how we do
habits.
That's right.
And in fact, that the supermarkets structures around the consumer habits is different to where it is abroad.
It is, because we would probably all be really pleased in the summer to pay 40p for a lettuce.
Yeah.
But you'd have to have the knowledge that in the winter, your lettuce is going to be a pound. Yeah? So it would actually average out. But what consumers want is, well, no, we'll have it at 40p all the time.
Yeah. That's really strange in my head. That's really odd. So there's some supply issues, partly caused by issues in the supply chain, farms in particular, in terms of weather and crops, that's
how it is. And whether it's the case or not, I don't know. But as soon as the country was, you know, locked down over COVID, I think a lot of people who were reliant on those forms of work have to do something else. And I don't know if all of them have gone back. I know that in the UK, getting fruit pickers is really hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Getting that...
Tended to be migrant labour from the continent.
Yeah.
Before...
Yeah. So, well, whether that's mirrored on the continent, I don't know. But I know that a lot of people's lives have changed over COVID.
Yeah.
Mine certainly has.
Yeah. But it's not just COVID, is it? It's about getting those transient workers coming in for the summer.
Well, we've also got much Brexit easier. Within it, haven't we?
Which is much easier with this freedom of movement.
And we've got the weather. We've got the issues with the weather, which was a really mild August, September, where there was a real glut. Mm. And what they were saying is that actually, it was actually quite mild in the early part of the winter, which meant a lot of the plants grew on.
Yeah.
And then the next crops haven't caught up,
and
so there's just a gap. But they're forecasting that for about 4 weeks, aren't they? So even though you can't make a decision to grow a tomato in 4 weeks, what you can do is try to put yourself in a position where you are growing your own vegetables and fruit, so that when these fluctuations occur, you've got some scope to make some transitions and take control of what you could eat. You might not be able to have everything you want to eat.
No.
But you could certainly have
things to eat.
The opportunity to eat things.
It's an interesting mindset to me, because obviously, you know, chances are the people who listen to this are people that are growing or intending to grow or would like to grow or have got, you know, some space or whatever it is. And they're probably thinking about producing their own produce as much as possible. And it's interesting to me that seed sales would go up by 40%. Which suggests to me that either we're all growing and buying a lot more seed, those people that are already doing it, which possibly is true.
Well, some greedy people like get a second allotment, don't they, Al?
They do think like that. I didn't buy any more seed, I'll tell you that.
I think it's new growers.
New growers.
I do, yeah. Or I think it's people who have been on the cusp of making decisions and then have decided to do it. Or it might be bulk buying by people who want to look at the seeds rather than for them, because they're aware that, you know, it might get
for next year.
Well, even this year, you know, there might be an element of that. But I'd like to think that people do make decisions about growing food at home and where they can, and
And I'm not saying everyone runs out and gets an allotment, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility, is it, to in your garden grow a few things, especially salad?
No, especially salad. What's curious to me, and I don't know what people are doing, and everyone that's doing it will have different circumstances, and in a sense, whatever they're doing it for, I'm pleased about it. But I'm also a little bit, there's a cynic in me coming out going, well, yeah, you can buy some tomato seeds now, and in the summer you'll have some tomatoes. But the chances are, so will the shops.
Of course they will.
And so by the time this problem has passed, and you've got a solution to this problem, the problem will have passed.
Yeah, but I would counter that by saying that even if you grow tomatoes for one season, your skill bank
is
huge. Yeah. And I mean, if you get really into it, you can save your tomato seeds from your tomatoes, and then you're done anyway.
Yeah.
But what it does do, though, is give people a bit of control, isn't it? And what kicks on from an immediate knee-jerk reaction to a gap in people's consumer experience is that it hopefully might lead people to taking more ownership of that and exploring other possibilities. Because I would imagine there are people out there who are going, well, how do you grow tomato? Why can't I just grow some?
Yeah.
And then you get into the, well, you can't because it's not the right time of the year. And it's not blah, 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 blah. But it also leads you to think about seasonality, doesn't it? It should do anyway. And for people, you know, we've spent the first half of this talking about doing things a little bit early and pinching a bit of time at both ends of the growing season. And, you know, but I do believe that eating seasonally is better for you. It's certainly cheaper for you. Mm. I can tell you that. And I think that I'm yet to hear a really good argument for the fact that my beans come from Kenya and they're all exactly the same, apart from because I want them.
I've yet to hear a
justifiable argument for that.
Yeah, and they don't compare to what you can have in the summertime that you've grown yourself anyway.
Well, I was having a conversation with someone at work today. If you go in to a supermarket or a greengrocer and you buy French beans, they're perfect. They are so. Where are all the ones that aren't perfect? Because I know, but they don't all look like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that they are not just used or wasted or whatever. I hope they're not. I wonder what the losses are like, and I hope that somewhere along the line, whether they're sold in different places or they're graded and then. But I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, they're all exactly the same length.
They're all perfectly straight,
and they're all perfectly green, and there's not a blemish on them. And that's because the British or European consumers won't put up with anything. You just wouldn't buy them, would you?
No.
So, where are all the ones that aren't like that?
Well, I might buy them, but
where are they all?
Well, I don't know where they are. But
maybe they don't even come out of the country
of
origin.
For animal feed, don't they? They go for animal feed. Or they're just
sold on. For a different quality, you know?
Yeah, a different grade for people that perhaps are more realistic about what your green bean probably really looks like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is that to try and think about what you could be eating now, you can't really do that now. You have to think, next year if it's like this.
Yeah. I suppose I have to have
a much longer term goal.
And I suppose that's where the cynic in me comes through, because there'll be a proportion of those 40% of extra seeds that are being sold that are going to people that know what they're doing with the seeds, right? A proportion of that are going on. And then there'll be a load of people that bought some seeds and they'll sow a few tomatoes and they might grow some tomatoes and that's great. And I'm really pleased about that, don't get me wrong. But it's not the tomatoes they need to grow.
No.
It's the salad for this time next year.
Yeah.
It's some brassicas for this time next year. It's some root veg for this time next year. Or it's some tomatoes that you're going to put up and store for this time next year.
Yeah.
And I think that the likelihood of there being a supply issue in the summer is much smaller than this time of year.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But it's not to say that, you know, if you were somebody who was growing and you had the capacity to have your carrots and you wanted them, you know, because carrots don't tend to be coming out in April.
No.
They tend to be sort of June early.
Yeah.
You're in the same position, aren't you? You could say about potatoes or apples or strawberries or, you know, runner beans or whatever it is. And it's about having a knowledge of sort of 365 days cycles.
Yes. Yeah.
And I would encourage people to really hold on to one thing, is that it isn't what you plant
it is when. It's not what, isn't it?
Not what, it's when, yeah.
Look at my fire's gone out and the temperature dropped.
Yeah, it really
has.
Do you
want me to put it back up?
No, I shouldn't worry.
I can stoke it up.
So maybe. I suppose what's the solution then? Because I'm feeling a bit cynical. I'm a little bit under the weather today and it's probably put me in a bit of a sour mood. So
that's not very good for the lid. Oh, you're not really selling this
podcast, dear. It's true. But I am.
I want to cheer up.
So let's cheer up. Marty. So what's the solution, right? So what I want to do is to encourage those people. You know, yeah. If you're out there and you're not already growing, it's to encourage people not only to be sowing something now, like we talked about. You know, Mike's got his long list. I'm looking at it now: tomatoes, peppers, aubergines, chilies, lettuce, beetroot, turnips. We've got shallots and onions, mange tout, broad beans, all sorts on the list, right? That you could be sowing now. And in fact, between now and the end of April, most of the things you're likely to want to sow
when you look at where the gaps are,
they get
really small by the time you get past May. Look,
by the time you're to the end of June, if you've not sown it for this year, you ain't sowing it, right? So definitely get on doing that.
I would say that, listen, there's a whole load of information on the internet, but I like a book, right? And I like a book that tells me what to do every month.
Yeah.
And even though I'm growing here now on a semi-professional scale, I use Alan Buckingham's month by month book.
Yeah.
It's available through the RHS, I think Dorling Kingsley. It's still available new.
Yeah.
You can pick it up. It's probably about £6-7.
Mm.
And it is a month by month. Mm. These are the jobs that you could be doing.
Yeah.
And for some people who are out there who have got a much bigger brain than I have, it might not be detailed enough. But it's very rare that I don't find what I need in that book, and it tells me when and what and how, and it's a page per entry. But it'll also got some information in there on common bugs and pests and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And so for one book, I can literally, at the first of each month, flick on it, because I forget stuff. That's what it actually is, you know.
I've got a really good one. I forget what it's called. For a long time, it was my favourite book, and it was just like The Allotment Year.
Yeah.
Forget exactly. I'll put
John Harrison's?
It's not a well-known one at all.
No, okay.
But what I liked about it was it's got a nice hardback on it.
That's it.
It's a really nice little, like, not even quite A5 size.
Oh, wow, that is good.
And it's got a little space to write in, and then it's got alongside it then, like, there's a little space to write in, and on the top of it's got, like, sew now.
Yeah.
So indoors, so outdoors.
That's exactly what Alan Buckingham's book's like.
Except
mine ain't nice because my dog chewed it up and it was a puppy, so it's all moth-eared and all that.
It's so nice I bought the second one.
Wow.
Because I did it, and the one year before last year, the year that I grew the most produce, I used it religiously and I wrote down everything in it that I'd done.
Yeah.
So when I'd sown, what I'd sown, what I harvested roughly, and just to give myself an idea of what was going on and how it was working, and that was a really good year for me.
And what I might do is I might, and this is something that took me a long time to do, I actually got rid of all my other gardening books.
Did you?
Because it's too much.
Too much noise.
Well, it's too much reading and not bloody doing.
Yeah.
And so I just decided I'd take one. And I've got some gardening books at home.
Yeah.
But I have one at work, funnily enough.
Yeah.
And it's all faded now. It's been in the polytunnel for the last 12 months. And, you know, scorched in the sun and wet and, and you know, dried and wet and dried. So it's all crinkly and everything. But it's just the one that I will use.
So
it'll just...
Don't buy seeds, or do buy seeds, but buy a good book as well.
Just get one decent book.
One good book.
That's me. You might be really happy going on, you know, finding someone, you know, growveg.com or Sarah Raven. I know she's got one where it just says jobs for, you know, Gardener's World has probably got one, hasn't it? Or the RHS.
Yeah.
Jobs to do in January.
Yeah.
You might prefer that, but I like to have my book in my greenhouse.
What I like about,
so look at it.
What I like about the one that I've got is that I can take it with me, and it's going to get a bit muddy and whatever, but I can write in it while I'm there, what I'm doing and what I've done. It just doesn't, you know, I'm not writing essays and diaries, I'm just making a quick note of that, you know.
So I definitely do that.
Broad beans, whatever.
And I suppose countering, going along with that, is find the cheap source of seeds, and we've talked about that before, but I would just go to Wilko at the moment.
Yeah.
I was in there again last week when I bought my greenhouse.
Yeah.
The potatoes, their onion, they've got everything in there.
And
you might be able to get slightly better quality online. You might even get it a bit cheaper, but they're quite nice small packs as well.
Yeah,
you know,
you don't have loads of seed left over.
No, and the other thing I would suggest is don't be too broad in what you're trying to do.
Mm.
That's my thing. I like to do one or two things really well.
Mm.
Grow things that you like to eat. But before you grow them, just try and get a tiny bit of knowledge on the back of the seed packet about the spacings, because
yeah.
the amount of new gardeners who say, I like cabbage, I'm going to grow a cabbage.
Yeah.
Well, two cabbages are going to take up your whole bed
yeah.
where you could get. And if you want to grow cabbages, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
But you could probably grow a year's worth of salad in that bed.
Mm, possibly, yeah.
You know, cut and come again.
Yeah, yeah.
Spring onions.
With good rotation, good succession.
You could, so you, could grow. You get a lot more than two dinners and two cabbages out of it. Yeah, I can tell you that. And so thinking about the best use of what you've got, but also the amount that you can get out of the space. So I would do that. They would be my three things. I'd get some seeds. I'd get a decent book about it. Or, you know, online thing. And then I would just do a plan. And just before you think, I like peppers and I'm going to grow them all outside. Well, you know, you're going to need quite a big space to grow a lot of pepper plants.
Yeah,
you're going to need a really good summer to get them outside, aren't you?
Yeah.
Whereas there are other things which are very prolific and will make a big dent.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you don't have those little nice things as well, but running through the core, perhaps, always having something, you know. I don't eat a lot of chard. We eat it, but it's always in my garden from kind of August to May.
Well, literally,
because it's there.
Yeah.
And then if everything else dies, I've got vegetables.
And I'm looking at my Cavolo Nero now, which is just starting to run to seed.
Yeah, and mine.
And we're talking almost a year after I started.
And mine, yeah.
And it's been stood there the whole time.
And I've picked it from time to time. Every week.
Yeah.
Absolutely the same.
Not every week in our house, but I picked it when I wanted it, and it's been there, it's stood there, and it's still there. And it will still be there for another week or two, and then I'll take it out, and guess what?
Yeah.
I'll sow some more.
Yeah, and it won't be long, will it?
So I'm going to add to your list. Get your soil right.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Get your soil right, because that's the bedrock of everything that you do. And if you're thinking you could just turn your lawn over and you can grow in it, yeah, you probably can. And it'll be all right for some things, but it won't be so much for others. So just be aware that actually it might not necessarily be the best thing to do to turn your soil. If you can get hold of enough compost, have a look at the no dig, get some, you know, cardboard down. Everyone's got loads of cardboard these days. It's not easy to get your hands on cardboard. Lay that down and stick 4 inches of good compost on top and grow in that. Save yourself a load of digging, a load of effort. And then the other thing I would do is encourage people to think about that next step of gardening, which is the what do you do when you've finished your summer crop?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the bit where people are struggling now. Like, it's great, and I'm delighted. Don't get me wrong, I'm a bit mardy, but I'm delighted that people are going out and buying seed and that more people are going to be growing stuff. But it's great news for everybody that people are doing that. But the issue isn't going to be in the summer, the issue is more likely to be in the winter. So, what do you do about winter crops? Make sure you've got things in that are going to stand over the winter. I've just taken out the last of my Brussels sprouts, for example. Cavolo Nero is coming to an end. I've got purple sprouted broccoli coming in now. I've got chard stood now. I've got a few leeks left.
Yeah.
There's a couple of swedes still in the ground even.
Yeah, same as here.
You know, there's vegetables that you can have still in February and March that are going to be there.
Absolutely, and ones from your store as well. We've talked about storage. But yes, and that certainly is the kind of difference, isn't it, between just growing a few veg and one, you know, you grow one courgette.
And I suppose that's why I'm a bit grumpy about it. It's like, that's great. That's great. But it doesn't help you solve the problem. I'm really pleased.
The skills do.
Maybe.
If you've gone through germinating and sowing and potting up, the skills are there. It's just moving the time frame and the crop knowledge. And the crop knowledge will come, certainly. And again, I would say, you know, Don't be too complicated with it. Get your chard. If you've never eaten chard, try some chard. You know, if you've not eaten Cavolo Nero, try it. And if you don't like it, then do something else. Yeah. You know, there are other things that are out there.
Yeah.
But buying a book or looking online at your month by months will at least make you see, well, what could I harvest in where I live now?
Yeah.
Obviously, that book that I was referring to is a UK book. Probably, you know, the further away from the UK you go, I'm not sure how it would
replicate. Well, the less relevant it would become, I imagine.
But as well as the things that you can sow, and the things you can sow indoors, and the things you can sow outdoors, there'll always be a section of this is what you could be harvesting. And I think that's probably just as valuable, isn't it? So you go to January and you go, what can you pick in January? And then you look at this, well, there's quite a few things actually you can pick in January, you know. And then seeing how it's not just about that spring to autumn harvest, it's
it's much more three-dimensional, four-dimensional actually than that. So
yeah, I'd feel my brush and leaves.
Don't let it get it down though, bro. Don't be getting all marty, man.
So the other question then is going back to my friends who needed some eggs.
Yeah.
What's the solution? Go on.
Quail. Your friends who needed some eggs.
Yeah.
So
I suppose, you know, I told them.
If you're a yeah, you probably told them to buy some chickens.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah, and that's fine if you've got space and time and inclination. But if you haven't got that, then I suppose what you and I would be looking at is, well, what sources of eggs have I got? You know, and where can I get them from? And what are the supply and demand like there? So that I'm not just, if I go to my one shop and they haven't got them in there, how then, what am I doing? You can store eggs as well. And I would probably, if I was really worried about egg supply, I might be looking at doing some ones frozen. So at least I've got something.
I've got a couple of dozen frozen in my freezer now.
Yeah, or doing the ice in glass or what have you. I've never done the ice in glass, but but you know, my thoughts on keeping chickens, man. Everyone should do
the first thing I said to them, what you need is some chickens. You know, they're such good pets.
I haven't got any pet chickens, mate. You have, I'll have.
Well, I know, but.
They're laying like Billy-O now, aren't they?
As critters that live in your garden, if you can have anything that lives in your garden, don't have a rabbit or a guinea pig, have some chickens.
Yeah, I totally and utterly agree with that.
You know, it's just logical to me. And like you say, I mean, we've got more eggs now than we can. To the point, I've almost thought about putting some out for sale this week. I didn't, I made a cake in the end, but, you know, it was nice to have that choice.
Absolutely, and I just think there's such a available luxury. I don't know how else to describe it. I never am not grateful when I go and get eggs out of it. No. It's like being a kid or something, isn't it? It's like finding treasure in it, and it's always the same. So I would certainly encourage people to do it, and don't just immediately think it's something that you can't do.
No.
You know, and there's so much available material out there. Yeah. But perhaps next, you know, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility. Our next podcast, we could try and hone in on poultry a little bit, and we could maybe. We could look at, you know, I'll take some photos of mine and your hen house and how you could start poultry keeping, because it's around that time, isn't it? You could even incubate and stuff like that. So we could look at that. Mm. That might be a nice place to start for people, and might make quite a nice feature. But it'd be nice if people said what they wanted, wouldn't it?
Well, it'd be nice to hear what people want to hear. I mean, I've got a few ideas of what I want to do going through the summer. And actually, like, try and get, we did a couple of series and kind of do a little catch up and then do a little series for half an hour afterwards, which I think is quite good. It prevents us from rambling, so it's probably not a bad shout, because we're quite good at rambling, it turns out.
I never ramble. What are you on about?
No, of course not. No.
anyway, we're putting clothes on here rapidly
because
the temperature of my workshop's dropping.
But obviously, if you've got anything out there particularly you want to hear us talk about, then please do stick it up on the Facebook group. And if you're not in the Facebook group, get in there, come and say hello and tell us what you're up to. We always love seeing that. And been really nice. I've taken over the kind of the duties of welcoming new members, and I can't figure out how you do it at the moment. So, to all those new members this week, welcome. You've joined the group, but I can't figure out how to send you a welcome message. there's been loads. I've been really surprised.
It's been a lot of people coming.
I've done it lately,
board.
And it's been
I hope everyone who comes on board actually listens to the podcast, or they just think it's just some group.
I don't know. Either way, I'll put up a thing out there when I put this episode
when
out.
Tell people
it's there.
Okay.
So they'll find out there's a podcast, and hopefully that means they'll listen. Our listening numbers have gone through the roof this year, which is really nice to see.
It's all your hard work, mate.
For that, really grateful for that. People wanting to listen. I guess it's all those people that have bought seeds, and I've just alienated all of them. So
well done, mate. We'll go on there later on, and there'll be about 10 people dropped off it.
Yeah. Hopefully not. Hopefully they'll find some value in what we've got to say. But we will be back again in a couple of weeks, like I say. If you're not already on there, give us a follow and get in the group and tell us what you're up to. Tell your friends about us, and we will speak again soon. Cheers.
See you later.
So, ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed listening to the latest episode of the Homesteading UK podcast, please get onto our Facebook group, Homesteading UK Podcast Facebook group. Come and follow us on Instagram and all those good places. And please do tell all your friends about us and how much you've enjoyed listening. Come back again next time. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers. Bye-bye.